ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। मूकं करोति वाचालम् पङ्गुं लङ्घयते गिरिम् यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुतः स्तुन्वन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदै साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। Libhashyam commentary on a commentary given as an introduction to the 11th verse of the second chapter. Bhagavan Shankara Bhagavat Pada established, raised objections, and he also established how knowledge is the only means for moksha. Karma by itself cannot be the means for moksha. Karma combined with knowledge also cannot be means for moksha. Knowledge combined with the karma also is not the means for moksha. It is the knowledge, because the freedom, the moksha, freedom from sorrow, freedom from limitations, is not a desire which is created. A created, cultivated desire can be fulfilled by doing something. It is a natural urge. Second thing, it is the natural emotional urge that I want to live long, happily, I want to be happy. There are natural emotional urges. And second thing, the freedom, the desire for freedom also is already there. When a person discovers that desire for freedom from limitations in the form of desire for living long, happily, is already there. And only Shastram helps you to discover the desire which is already there. The desire is not created. Shastram helps you to discover the desire which is already there. Once you discover your desire, discovering the desire being already there itself is what? Discovering your end. The ultimate end. Once the end is understood, then the means also becomes very clear. Then you become committed. This, the knowledge alone is the means for moksha. First we say, jnanam, jnanad eva kaivalyam, jnanam eva mokshasya sadhanam. What is to be sadhyam, what is to be achieved is moksha. And the sadhanam is the jnanam here. Jnanam sadhanam, sadhyam is moksha. We first say means and the end. Thereafter we say the means itself is the end. Why? Because then we say knowledge and moksha are identical. Because in discovering what the truth is, the happiness also becomes discovered as the very swarupam. Not two different things. Now we understand. Therefore, knowledge itself is means for moksha. Even no karma is required there. What karma do you need to do just to know there is light? Once the eyes are open, the light is there. The seeing It just happens. You don't need to do anything. To see the light as it is, it's as a, with the swarupam of illumining, what work do you need to do? What work do you need? Keeping your eyes open, do you need to do dance and drink, sing and anything? Do you need to do anything? You don't need to do anything. Eyes are open, light is there, you just see it. Okay? And the seeing is not even action. Similarly, here also, once you know what the reality is, the swarupam also becomes known simultaneously. You don't need to do anything. It's only the knowing. It's just, that's why we say, really discovering what is knowledge. Okay, that's why elimination of ignorance is, dispelling of ignorance is knowledge. Knowledge is not created. It is created, then so you have to do something. The knowledge is not created. Okay, it is already there. It has to manifest. It has to surface. It is dormant. It is latent. Something is veiling the knowledge. For it to surface, all that you need to do is you need to unveil the ignorance. Okay? Then now it becomes known. So no karma is required. But what about karma? That is emphasized all over Bhagavad Gita. One has to do karma. One has to be active. Because karma is not looked down upon. The performance of karma, performance of duties, performance of the Vedic rituals, Shrautam karma, Smartam karma, Smriti prescribed karmas, Shruti prescribed karmas, duties, rituals, forms of worship, apart from your obligated duties, the ashrama dharmas, what all one has to do as one belongs to which ashrama you belong to, you have your own duties. In keeping with one's ashrama, you have different types of duties. Even grihastha or vanaprasthi or brahmacharya, you have your own duties. Those duties are there. Varna dharmas are there. Again, we have our own different duties, whatever it is. So different types of role plays you have. And in keeping with the role plays, you have to do a lot of karma. All those karmas need to be done. No karma is considered inferior. No superior also. Performance of karma is important. But don't look at karma as a means for discovering happiness, means for moksha. Performance of karma is important in order to prepare your mind for jnanam. But karma is need not be combined with jnanam for moksha. That has been very, very clearly stated in all the Bhashyam we read till now, before he started the 11th verse. Anyway, so having come to the 11th verse, so Bhagavan Uvacha, we're going to see today. He also said, because the problem is purely the dukkhasya, mamatvasya, ahankarasya, whatever it is, any problem is because of the self. It's the problem is self-centered on one's own self. And there's also mamakaraha. Because of the ahankara, there is mamakaraha. Once you say this I sense, there's also my sense. The sense of possession, the possessiveness, these are all result in problems. And all these problems are basically, if you analyze, any problem is fundamentally is a modified form of, in fact, insecurity. The insecurity is nothing but another form of, modified form of fear. The fear is, in fact, the state of mind. And that fear, basically, is a fear of death. I tell you, fear of death. Shastram has very well analyzed. You can go and see anywhere, any place, any psychiatrist, any psychotherapist, you can go and discuss about it. If you see root cause, if you see finally, everything can be reduced to insecurity, insecure feeling. That is because of the fear of death. The anxiety, fear, different degrees of fear, the fear caused anything. Fear caused by anything is basically the modified form of the fear of death. And that fear of death, you cannot undo it. Understand? It has its root cause. It has its root, the cause. Ignorance is the cause. And why there is fear? Why there is such a thing called fear? Even this morning I was saying, actually, the very question of pursuit. Why there is such a thing called pursuit? why should we go for pursuing something? Why can't we remain quiet? Now, the need, the necessity, the drive to pursue something itself is an expression of, in fact, the insecurity. You feel secure only if you do something, you pursue something. The very pursuit itself becomes inevitable because of the basic insecure feeling, because of the insecurity. Okay, all of us are insecure. Every human being, born human being, everybody is insecure. With reference to insecurity, all the human beings are sailing in the same boat. Nobody is free from this insecure feeling. The insecurity is naturally there. That is why the pursuit is inevitable. Understand? That's why for Purushartha, we have to classify, okay, what all he pursues, artha, kama, dharma, moksha, we have to classify. Understand? All the four pursuits are because of this, in fact, the drive. Okay, because they're driven to, caused by this insecurity. And that insecurity is basically, in fact, the fear of death. And the fear of death, as long as there's fear of death, there'll be these problems. And that fear of death, in fact, is because of the notion that one has about oneself, that I'm a mortal. I'm going to die one day. That notion is because of one's identity with the body, mind sense complex, body bind with the body. That erroneous notion one has about oneself is because of one's own ignorance of oneself. In fact, we can say ignorance of oneself means ignorance of what exactly is death, ignorance of these things. What is death? What is birth? Okay, what is living through life of pains and pleasures? What is this life all about? What is the fact? What is real? What is as though? Okay, all the understanding many subtle realities, subtle facts. So, understanding of subtle facts is not simply understanding the self and then knowing the truth and then remaining quiet. Many subtle facts become understood, really speaking. So, that's why it has to cover a lot of things. So, basically, one has to know about this thing. So Krishna, Atma Jnanam Anyat, Apashyan, other than self-knowledge, not seeing any other solution for this problem, because the problem is recognized, the solution also becomes very clear. As long as you don't recognize the problem, solution won't be clear. Once the problem is recognized, see, recognizing the problem itself is a great achievement. So when the problem is recognized, the solution can be found out. And then here, Krishna, apashyan anyat, apashyan means not seeing any other means for udadidarishihu, not to lift Arjuna up, lift him up, to make him active. Listen, because non-performance of actions, not doing one's duties is not the means, will not help one, to be free from problems or sorrow. Non-performance or being inactive, becoming, sitting idle or lazy will not help one really. And doing things also will not really help one. It is not the question of, it is not the doing or non-doing, it's all the ignorance. The problem is because of the ignorance. Therefore, he has to be active, he has to do what he has to do. Therefore, Krishna thought he should really help him, not to lift him up. No, help him to do what he needs to do. All he needed was the clarity. So, Atmajnanam Anyat Apashyan, other than the self knowledge, not seeing anything else, Krishna started teaching. Okay? Let us see the beautiful verse we had to start. In fact, the actual Bhagavad Gita starts only from today. So, you're all here. Nice to have all of you today. Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha.
Om Shri Paramatmane Namaha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha.
Ashochyanan Vashochastvam. Ashochyanan Vashochastvam. Prajñāvādāṁśca bhāṣase, prajñāvādāṁśca bhāṣase,
gataso na gatasomscha gataso na gatasomscha nana shochanti pandita nana shochanti pandita ashochyan ashochyan anvashochastvam anvashochastvam prajñavadanscha bhashase prajñavadanscha bhashase gataso na gatasomscha gataso na gatasomscha nana shochanti pandita nana shochanti pandita natvevaham natvevaham jatunasam jatunasam natvam neme natvam neme janadhipah janadhipah nachaiva nachaiva na bhavishyamah na bhavishyamah sarve sarve vayamatah param dehinasmin dehinasmin yatha dehe kaumaram kaumaram yauvanam jara yauvanam jara tatha dehantara praptihi
tatha dehantara praptihi
dhirastatra namuhyati dhirastatra namuhyati.
Okay, just for it to be to feel in the Bhagavad Gita, no, feel the Bhagavad Gita, just want to recite some verses. So Bhagavan Uvacha, Bhagavan said, I have told you all the meaning of the word Bhagavan many times. I don't want to repeat it. Anyway, let me repeat it. Because a few people, because knowing the meaning of the word Bhagavan itself is sort of auspicious, sort of auspiciousness. Because Bhagavan, you know, Bhagaha Yasya Asti Saha Bhagavan. The one who has Bhaga is Bhagavan. One who has Dhanam is Dhanavan. Gunam is Gunavan. Okay, one who is endowed with something is, now Alan Mahodaya speaks one. Okay, because he's like that. One who has something is that one. Okay, possessor of that. Similarly, Bhagavan, one who has Bhaga is Bhagavan. And what is what Bhaga means? Bhaga stands for sixfold virtues. You know, sixfold virtues means, I can tell you, all knowledge, jnanam, okay, samagram, all knowledge, jnanam, shrihi, all forms of wealth, wealth, prosperity in its entirety is shrihi, jnanam, yashaha, jnanam, shrihi, viryam. Viryam means all strength. Now the strength of anybody, anything, anywhere in the world, all strength, put together is the viryam, strength, yashaha, fame, the eminence, whoever is known for anything, that fame, that popularity, that eminence, it's all fame, yashaha, then vairagyam, something very beautiful you have to understand, viragasya bhavaha, vairagyam, okay, vairagyam in fact is dispassion. Dispassion means the total dispassion is also here. It's because total being dispassionate is something, not something undesirable, something unhealthy. And people think, oh, dispassion means sick person. There's no passion for anything sick. We think people mistake, the sick people mistake the healthy people for sick. when they don't understand, being dispassionate is not something, being dispassionate implies the maturity. So total dispassion, why? Because when the Swarupam being, the Swarup of the Lord being happiness, fullness, the wholeness, limitlessness, what is lacking there? There's nothing, okay? That means there's no inadequacy at all. Inadequacy being not there, there cannot be any needs, there cannot be any desires, therefore there cannot be passion for anything. No passion for anything. Understand? Therefore, that is for total dispassion, vairagyam. Everything is Bhagavan. How can there be any passion separately? Understand? Therefore, total dispassion is vairagyam. Vairagyam, then Aishwaryam is overlordship. Once you're endowed with all knowledge, all wealth, all fame, all strength, and you have total dispassion, I tell you, then look, how can there be, how can there not be overlordship? This is the overlordship. This is Aishwaryam. The sixfold virtues, in fact, are implied by the word Bhaga. Understand? And one who is endowed with the sixfold virtues, the Bhaga in equal measure is Bhagavan. Okay, suppose Bhagavan is the whole for us. Suppose Bhagavan happens to talk to us. Okay, how will it be? How can he talk? He should be talking this way. He can't be talking this differently, no? We personify this, the meaning of the, this, the meaning of this word Bhagavan. So Bhagavan Uvacha. So we say Krishna came. No, Krishna, always we talk, Bhagavan was in the form of Krishna. The Jnani also is looked upon, looked at as, no, as Bhagavan. Any Jnani is considered to be as good as Bhagavan for us. Why? Because he is also, he is totally dispassionate person. Because he has discovered fullness, he is free from inadequacy, he is free from needs, he is free from desires, he has no passion for anything. He is a dispassionate person. He is not a sick person. Okay? He is normally normal person. Highly healthy person. Therefore, Jnani also is, a, you know, is considered to be Bhagavan. That's why we always, Mahatmas, we fall at their feet, think that they are, we look at them as Bhagavan. It's a culture, okay? Anyway, so here, Bhagavan Uvacha, Krishnaha Uvacha. So he said, no, the Uvacha verb, I don't want to go into the grammatical aspects of the verb. Uvacha, Uvacha is the past perfect tense of Vadati. Uvacha had said, in fact, doesn't matter, Bhagavan said. So he said, he started Arjuna, talking to Arjuna. Why he had to talk to him? Because he saw Arjuna was tears, eyes were full of tears. He was, you know, he, in fact, he couldn't even see. His eye, this vision became, he saw it because he was, eyes were, he couldn't see things properly. His eyes were full of tears, which showed that he was completely overwhelmed, you know, overwhelmed by sorrow. He had to be raised up, in fact, lifted up. He needed a big pat. So he started talking. So he say, Ashochan Anvashochaha Prajna Vadamscha Bhashase Gatasun Agatasumscha Na Anashochanti Panditaha. Arjuna talked very eloquently, like a great wise person. The whole of first chapter, he said, what will happen if this battle will go through, okay? If there'll be battle, and if there'll be fight between the Dhritarashtra sons and Pandava sons, what will be the consequences of the war? Even now people are talking about the consequences of war. All of us always know the consequences of any war, any battle, but still wars have been, no? Even now we are expecting, no? So any time there can be war, but still even then, his thoughts, whatever he reflected on, now, as consequences of war, really sounded very beautiful, wonderful. Really, that's true. But still, that was irrelevant for him, that situation. Understand? And Bhagavan said, in one of his, the previous, the Bhashyam, he said, whenever a person is highly confused of dharma, okay, viveka, when there is no viveka, when he is confused of what is right and what is wrong, when a person is, now, then he's thinking capacity and the buddhi shakti, this vairagya, this viveka vijnanam is in fact abhibhutam bhavati, where it is clouded by, you know, this I sense and my sense, and also shokha, moha, with the sorrow, etc. He cannot think well, and definitely he would not like to do what he has to do, and he would like to do what he should not be doing, and these things happen, it's all problems. No, it's all expression, emotional problems. That's what we will do. That is how Arjuna was. Therefore, Krishna really had to teach him, to relieve him of the emotional, the problems. And so, he said, Bhashase. Now, Bhashase, you speak like what? Prajnavadana. Prajnaha means panditaha. Panditaha means, no, the wise people. Prajnavadana Bhashase. Okay, vadaha, no, the words of wisdom, you speak like wise person, but really speaking, you are not wise. Why? Because wise people do not grieve, do not become sad. They can't afford to become sad. They may look sad. They may feel compassion for other people. Anything, any worry can make them feel, look sad, but they are not really sad. Understand? So, but here he says, Prajna vadamscha bhashase. You speak like a wise person, but you are not wise. It means what? You have to become wise. When he said you are not wise, you have to become wise. You are not wise. Why? Because panditaha na anushochanti. Panditaha, the wise people, do not grieve. See, shochanti, it's a very interesting verb. Shuch is the dhatuhu. Shochate is the verb. Shochati, shochante, shochanti. Okay, anushochanti means continuously, okay? This grieving is a continuous thing. This is anushochanti, always grieving. How can I say this? Not shochanti itself is enough to grieve. But anushochanti means what? The prefix anu implies the grief is something constant, okay? Always something or the other. One problem goes, other problem comes. That's why the grief is something continuous. So anushochanti, always worried about something or the other. They grieve. Who? Panditaha na anushochanti. Wise people do not grieve. Na anushochanti. But what are you doing? You speak like a pandita, but you are grieving. Okay, you are grieving for what? You are grieving for people, those who really do not deserve any grief at all. And you are grieving for a situation which really doesn't deserve any grief at all. Ashochyane tvam anvashochaha. Prajnavadan bhashase. Tvam, no, the tvam, actually it's a very important tvam here. When Krishna addressed Arjuna as tvam, the second person singular pronoun you, and that tvam in fact, Akhanda Shankaracharya says beautifully, we're going to see later on, not immediately, the whole Bhagavad Gita is in fact based on the explanation of the tat tvam asi mahavakyam. Now what's the mahavakyam? The mahavakyam is a great declaration, the great statement, which reveals which equates you to Bhagavan, which reveals the identity between you and Ishvara. That is a Mahavakyam. Understand? This is a Mahavakyam. There's a difference between you and Ishvara. From the standpoint of individuality and the totality, you are different from Ishvara, Bhagavan, the whole. At the same time, there's also non-different from another standpoint. Understanding the non-difference between you, the individual, and Bhagavan, the whole, from the absolute standpoint is in fact revealed by the statement. That's why it's called Mahavakyam. Tattvamasi Mahavakyam. And that Mahavakyam is in fact taken here as a base for the whole teaching. So the Tvam Pada Artha, the meaning of the Tvam is explained here in the first six chapters. The first six chapters stand for the Tvampada and the second six chapters stand for the Tatpada Artha, the meaning of the word Tat, the Ishwaraha. And all next six chapters, the rest of the 18 chapters, the rest of the six chapters which come after 12th chapter, those six chapters stand for the Asipada Artha. Understand? The whole Mahavakyam become very clear. You understand all the 18 chapters. Understand? That is why this Tvam is in fact the Tvam. Tattvam. The Tvam in Tattvam is Mahavakyam. Understand? So Tvam Bhashase. Kim Bhashase? Prajna Vadan Bhashase. You speak the words of wisdom. You speak like the words of wise people. But Tvam Prajna Vashase. But Ashochan Anvashochaha. But you are not wise. Why? Panditaha na anushochanti. It contradicts. Because panditaha, again the word panda means knowledge. Okay, panda means knowledge. Panda, why? Because panda also means the white color. Okay, white color. And white always stands for clarity and knowledge, wisdom, effulgence, brilliance. So here panditaha, one who is ended with panda, knowledge is called panditaha. Especially here, knowledge of the self, knowledge of the truth, knowledge of Bhagavan, one who knows the absolute truth, is the panditaha here. And panditaha na anushochanti, they are the real wise people. They do not grieve. So those who grieve are not panditaha. The Panditaha do not grieve. You are grieving, so you are not Pandita. You have to become Pandita, not to free, become free from grief. So he says, from Ashoch, and then what are you grieving for? You are grieving for those who do not deserve any grief at all. Who is he grieving for? He is not grieving for an ordinary beggar, ordinary people there, on, you know, the ordinary people who really deserve some compassion, who really deserve some pity and mercy. But really he is grieving for Mahatmas, Drona, Bhishma. Who is Bhishma? Man of great wisdom, who knows what is reality, who knows what is the truth, who knows what is dharma, who knows what is adharma, who is completely free from objective, who was completely free from doership and jarship. Bhishma was an ordinary person. Understand? In spite of being a Mahatma, he just played his role. He knew what will happen. Because only if you're free from doership and jarship, you can just be there, doing the needful. Understand? For the well-being of the people. Just doing something. Even though he was with the people who were non-righteous, still, you know, he was with Duryodhana and his people, but still, he was an ordinary person. He is free from bhoktrutvam and jarship. He was free from kartrutvam. He was a jnani, and his presence was big strength for many people. Very presence of Bhishma is enough to feel secure for many people. That was Bhishma. And he was thinking, oh, what will happen to Bhishma? Oh, I can't. No, what will happen to Drona? Who is Drona? Another Acharya who taught archery, all the secrets of warfare to all the people of both sides. All of them who were there, who gathered in the battlefield, were students of Drona. Such a great Acharya. And so many other people, and all of them, really speaking, they don't deserve anything, okay? They need not be protected by anybody here. This involving them in this battle is not going to do any harm to them, those people. So they really do not deserve any grief. This is the first thing. Okay? One standpoint. Then, otherwise, also they do not really deserve any grief because, really speaking, this is when we grieve for, you know, what is shochyam? What is a shochyam? You see, the word shochya, as a potential passive participle, can shochya, that which deserves grief, is shochya. Okay, what is shochyam? In fact, what is universally, if you look at what is shochyam, is the death. The death, you know, the death is something, anywhere, death happens in any culture, anywhere in the world, any community, society, death of somebody causes pain. That death is shochya. But even then, if you analyze, death also, we don't need to really grieve over death. Why? Because it's a pain. I don't say no. But that it doesn't deserve any anushochanam because it is meaningless. If you analyze and understand what is death, death is nothing but a change. Okay? And all these physical, anyway, we have to understand the facts involved in the about the death. What is death? The physical body, nothing but combination of five elements. Panchabhyaha bhutebhyaha, no? This is jatam. So it's a combination of five elements. Anything which is put together has to fall apart. That is the law here. So if this is also a combination of five elements, and definitely it has to fall apart. It has a beginning, definitely it has to have end also. Anything which has a beginning has to have an end. There's an again another thing. So if at all from the standpoint of the physical body also, it is a fact. It is unavoidable thing. We can't change. It's unchangeable truth about the body. Nothing to worry about it. And it is definite. Understand? So here, even then, so Pandita, who are the Panditaha? Those who know the facts, subtle facts. Once you know the facts, that means you accept the facts. How long can you deny the facts? As long as you don't accept the facts. As long as you deny the facts, you can't accept the facts, you are immature, according to Shastram. When you are able to accept the facts, you are mature. All that you need to do is, you need to accept, you can't blindly accept the facts. Understand? If you simply say, accept, learn to accept, you say, you'll go mad, you'll be angry. Understand? That's why don't simply accept everything, learn to accept. No. Acceptance should be born of understanding. Once you know the facts, understand the facts, then you can naturally, without being told by somebody that you will accept the facts, but because you are intelligent, you know. Once you know, understand the facts, accept the facts, then you don't deny the facts. And there's no problem. Okay, non-denial of fact itself is for expression of maturity. You should accept it for maturity. So this also thinks, the panditaha, who can understand the subtle facts, all about these things, once the self is known. Understand? Who is a panditaha? Not simply knowing the self, okay? Once the person knows what is the truth of oneself, what is the self, what is the truth of the whole jagat, then then many other subtle facts which go with that become understood. Only then there is acceptance. Self-knowledge does not simply, it's not mere self-knowledge. Knowledge of the self as a byproduct, okay, will bless you with many subtle facts, knowledge of many subtle facts, which you cannot gain by study of any other science. Okay? Then you understand. Therefore, panditaha na anushochanti. It's all question of understanding subtle realities and facts of life, which is possible only in the wake of the self-knowledge. Such people do not agree. Understand? So here also, that is this death of the body is nothing but the change. Just the change. And we say change, we say changes, that's why we say, can we say that death is a destruction then? No, it is not destruction. For us, we look at it as a destruction. No? Death of the physical body, is it a destruction? Is the body destroyed? We do talk. In day-to-day conversation, we do say body is destroyed. In fact, Shastra says, there is no such thing called real destruction. There is destruction. There is relative destruction, not real destruction, absolute destruction. Why? Because nothing is reduced to nothing. When something happens, suppose even if you burn the wood becomes coal. Even if you make the coal to powder, there will be powder. This is a modified form. The modification, the change which takes place on a given thing is said to be the birth of something new and the death of something. The wood is, the death of wood is the birth of coal. The birth, death of coal is in fact the birth of ashes. You can say like this. This, but one is always reduced to something else, which change. This change from being one thing to another thing is called relative destruction. Understand? There is no such thing called absolute destruction. Really speaking, there is no such thing called destruction at all. Similarly, therefore, the death of the physical body also is nothing but the change. Nothing but the big change. Okay, before death also there are so many changes which take place. Our mind is too gross to understand subtle changes which keep on taking place, changing, happening every fraction of a second, every day, every minute, in terms of like cell division, etc. We don't even notice. The same old skin is not there on us. But still, we don't see through our gross things because we are so remain engrossed in the gross things. We don't see the subtle facts really speaking. But and the death is there, the total disappearance of the form. But the total is in a different form. It's called relative destruction. And because it has beginning, it has to have an end. Because that's again, we can't change. This is what cannot be changed. And okay, understanding what cannot be changed. Change is something which cannot be changed. What is unchangeable is the change. That is the nature. Once I understand this fact, then I accept it. Understand? Say something which cannot be changed. Therefore, this death is nothing but a change. Once I can, if I look at it, death as a change, and I have, if I can understand what I cannot change, that is why you always have a prayer, oh Lord, please bless me with knowledge and strength to change what I can, to accept gracefully what I cannot. We always try to change what we cannot. That is when we struggle. Okay, these are the facts. This is how things work, you know, the fact. This is what is death. So from the standpoint of the death also, really, death is not, you know, not so chill. It's an immaturity. Shokaha is there if there's immaturity. Shoka cannot be there if there's maturity. Maturity is there, there's acceptance. Immaturity is there if there's no acceptance. Acceptance is possible only if there's understanding. Therefore, understand. Okay? Bhagavan says, you need to know. You need to know. You need to grow. Knowing is in part growing. Without knowing, there's no way of growing. Understand? The growth will stop, stagnate, only when the knowledge is there. Till, until you know, there'll be growth. Emotionally, will be growing and growing and growing. On the knowledge, growth gets over. You cannot grow anymore. How long can you be growing? Not physically, I mean emotionally. So, he says, Ashocha, Anushochate, okay? Tum Anvashochaha. Tum Anvashochaha. In fact, it's Anu plus Ashochaha becomes Anvashochaha because of the Sandhi there, that Guna Sandhi. Anu Ashochaha, Anvashochaha, because Ashochi is the Dhat. Shochaha, Ashochaha itself is enough, you grieved. Anu Ashochaha, Anvashochaha. Tum Anvashochaha, you grieved for those, for something which doesn't deserve any grief. If you think and see what death is all about, what is there for you to grieve? You can grieve as long as you don't understand. No one should grieve. Bhagavan did not say that. Grieving is natural. Grief is very natural. Okay, it's only lack of understanding you grieve. So, that's why you say you don't know you are grieving. Once you know, panditahanna anushochanti. Tvam anvashochaha, you grieve for a situation which really does not deserve any grief at all. Understand? And therefore, you can say, then if we think and say, if at all, if this grief, does this grief, you know, has any legitimacy? Is it legitimate to grieve, really speaking? Even then, no. If we think and see, if we don't understand, if we don't know, you can have your own justify how legitimate it is to grieve. Really speaking, doesn't deserve any, okay, there's no legitimacy, really speaking. Therefore, tvam, you grieved for a situation which really doesn't deserve any grief. And you grieve for people who don't deserve any grief. You can say both ways. Ashochyan. Okay, Ashochyaha, one who deserves grief. Ashochyaha, one who does not deserve grief. Ashochyan, manushyan, janan, uddishya, tum anvashochaha. You grieved for those who really did not deserve any grief. So, ashochan anvashochaha, but tvam prajñavadamscha bhashase, you speak like a panditaha, but really speaking, gatasun, agatasun cha panditaha na anushochanti. Who is a gatasuhu? Who is agatasuhu? No? All in objective plural. Gatasuhu, gatasum, no? Gatasun, gatasum, gatasu, gatasun is a ditya bahuvachanam. Ukarantaha pullinga gatasuhu iti. Shabdaha, tasya dityayam bahuvachane gatasun iti rupam. So, gatasuhu, asuhu means the breath. And gataha asuhu, it's a samastam padam, compound word. Gataha asuhu yasmat, the one from whom the breath has gone is gatasuhu. In such a dead person, it's one word. Dead, I can simply say dead. The one from whom the breath has gone is gatasuhu. And agata asuhu is the one from whom the breath has not yet gone, one who is still alive. So, gata asuhu, agata na asuhu na gataha yasmat saha agata asuhu. Asuhu gataha yasmat saha gata asuhu. The dead and the living. So, gata sun jananu disha, agata sun jananu disha. Okay, thinking regarding people who are alive or people who are dead, okay, this buddhiman, panditaha na anushochanti. The wise people do not grieve for those who are alive or those who are dead. Why? Because where there is panditya, there cannot be grief. Knowledge and grief cannot coexist. Wisdom and sorrow, clarity and sorrow, grief cannot coexist. It's like darkness and light cannot coexist. Where there is dukkham, where there is shokaha, there is definitely ajnanam. There is, you know, the thinking capacity is clouded. Viveka vijnanam is clouded. Therefore, there can be what? there can be shokaha, there be delusion, confusion, fear. All these things are possible only if there is ignorance. Where there is clarity, knowledge, nothing, there cannot be delusion, there cannot be hallucination, there cannot be illusion, there cannot be fear, there cannot be stress, there cannot be sorrow, there cannot be grief. There is no problem. Understand? Therefore, Tvam, you need to know yourself first. Okay, how can we understand Tvam? Next question comes. Okay, Tvam. How can you understand Tvam? You need to know what you need to know there. So, you can simply say, if you know the meaning of the word Tvam, then definitely you will understand what is subject to death, what is not subject to death, you will understand. What can be changed, what cannot be changed, you will understand. Once you know what can be changed, you will make genuine efforts to change what you can. Once you understand what cannot be changed, then you will gracefully accept with maturity, understanding it as a fact. So one needs to know what is real, what is not real, what can be changed, what cannot be changed. Understand? Therefore, you need to know what is real. Therefore, he says, we have to think of this Tattvamasi Mahavakyam here to understand what Bhagavan exactly means here as the meaning of the word Tvam here. When you say the Tvam Pada, is the Tvam Pada, the word Tvam from Tattvamasi Mahavakyam is taken here and explained means, and when you say Tvam, Tattu Tvam Asi, when you say, you are equated to that. That means the word Tat stands for Bhagavan the whole. And Tvam stands for you, the individual Jiva. You, the individual. If you say, what do we mean by the word Jivaha? What is Jivaha? Jivaha means individual self. Who is individual self? Who thinks, I am small, I am insecure, I am insignificant, I am alpagyaha, I know very little, I am not almighty, okay, I have little strength, etc. This is person is the Jivaha, who has identity with the body, mind, sense complex. The individual with the identity, the body is complex is the individual Jivaha. We say Vyaktihi. And what is Ish Tattvara stands? Tattvara stands for Bhagavan the whole, the entire universe which is inclusive of you. And how Tvam Tat Asi, you are that thou art. How can you be equal to that, Ishvara? Because the difference is obvious. I'm an individual. I occupy a space. I have time limitation. I have date of birth. I don't know date of death, but still date of death is definite. Though I don't know about it. Date of birth is definite. Date of death is there. And time limitation is there. As an individual, I'm subject to spatial limitation, time limitation, object limitation, because I'm different from everything else that I see. Object limitation. I'm small. I know how much I know. Understand? I know my knowledge is very limited. My strength is very limited. I can lift very few kilos, not more than that. And I know what my strength is. I know what. Understand? Everything. I'm small. When compared to Bhagavan, the whole means what? He's almighty, omniscient, omnipotent, omnipotent, oh my God, omnipresent, everything we say. What's the difference between me and Bhagavan? How can I be equated to Bhagavan? How can Tvam, you, okay, be equated to Bhagavan, the whole, the almighty? Alpagyaha, Alpashaktiman, how can he be equated to Sarvagyaha, Sarvashaktiman, Bhagavan? Therefore, from this standpoint of, okay, so we have to see the two meanings. Understand? Whenever the two words are said, Tvam and Tat, we have two meanings for the word Tvam. We have two meanings for the word Tat. What is the first word? We say Vachyarthaha or Shabdarthaha. We have the Lakshyarthaha. Now, Vachyarthaha or Shabdarthaha means the simple meaning. Okay? The literal, simple, direct meaning is called Vachyarthaha. And the Lakshyartha means the implied meaning. Implied meaning. Two meanings are there here. So, when you say Tvam and Tat, That means the third person singular pronoun that, which stands for that Ishwara, that Lord, the whole. He said, Tvam, you, the individual, this individual, you. Second person singular pronoun. So the you, the second person singular pronoun, the individual, is equated to, Ishwara, the whole, indicated by the third person singular pronoun, Tat. Understand? Tvam, Tat. Tvam, Tat Asi. Tat, Tvam Asi. Understand? Tvam, Tat Asi. But that thou art when you say. So from the standpoint of the Vachyartha, definitely you are different. There is difference. If there is no difference at all between you and Ishwara, then no equation can be made. How can you be equated to Bhagavan? How can you be equated to Bhagavan? If there is no difference is there, the difference is definitely there, then you can be equated to Bhagavan. And there is no difference at all, why should we equate at all? There is no need for us to equate. When can there be equation made? The equation itself is possible. Only when there is difference. There must be difference. There must be non-difference. Only then equation is possible. So from the standpoint of the Vachyartha, there is difference. You are Alpagyaha, no doubt. Bhagavan is Sarvagyaha, there is no doubt. You are Alpagyaha. You are Alpashaktiman. Shaktimati, Bhagavan is Alpa Shakti, Sarva Shaktiman. Definitely there is difference between you and Ishwara Bhagavan. There is no doubt. But from the standpoint of the Lakshyartha, what exactly is implied by the word Tvam? The Lakshyartham of you, Tvam, and the Lakshyartha of Tat happens to be one and the same. You are non-different from Ishwaraha. Understand now? From the standpoint of the Vachyartha, this literal word meanings, you are different from Bhagavan the whole. From the standpoint of the implied meaning, you are non-different from Bhagavan. What is implied by the word Tat and Tvam? Happens to be one and the same. Understand? You are non-different from Bhagavan. What is simply revealed by the word Tvam and Tat? Actually, you are different from Bhagavan. There is difference relatively, but absolutely there is no difference. So understanding the relative difference from the standpoint of the Vachyartha, understanding the absolute non-difference from the standpoint of Lakshyartha is in fact understanding yourself being non-separate from Bhagavan. Understand? Which means this understanding of yourself being non-separate from Bhagavan itself is what? In fact, understanding yourself being limitless. Understand? In understanding yourself being limitless, in fact, all the subtle facts become understood. You will be free from fear and anxiety. You understand all subtle facts such as what is death, etc. Just understanding a fact relieves you, helps you accept and understand. It is a great teaching. Understand? So, therefore you need to know, how can you understand the Lakshyartham of Tat? Without understanding the Lakshyartham of Tat, the implied meaning of the word Tat, the Tvam, there is no way of understanding the Lakshyartham of the Tat. Understand? Improving of the word Tat. Therefore, you need to understand the Lakshyartham of Tvam. Now I understand the second person singular pronoun, the meaning of the word second person singular pronoun, Tvam, you. When you say each other, you, we know. We identify ourselves with the body minus complex. And with all the limitations, all the notions we have about ourselves, we think, I think, I know what I mean by the word Tvam. You know what you mean by the word Tvam. But what is the Lakshyartha? How to understand what is implied by the word Tvam? If you know the Lakshyartham of Tvam, the implied meaning of the word Tvam, then definitely implied meaning of Tat becomes understood. Once the implied meaning of Tat also becomes understood, you understand the non-difference between you and Tvam and Tat, then you understand how you are absolutely non-different from Bhagavan. How can I understand? You need to know. Bhagavan Krishna does not say that, but we have to do that here. Because I don't know whether you might have done some such classes before. To understand Tvam Shabda Artha, Lakshyartham of the Tvam, we have only one method in tradition. It is Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Understand? I'm going to do it now soon. So Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya means, Drik means, okay, it is analyze subject-object analysis. Only by using this method of unfold, methodology, we can always arrive at the Tvam Pada Arthaha or Aham Pada Arthaha. I mean the implied, you know, the actual meaning of the word Tvam. Okay, what is Drik Drishya Vivekaha? Veka Prakriya. What is this Prakriya? When you say Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya, Prakriya means methodology, method of unfoldment. We have two more words here. Prakriya we can say, Prakaranam we can say, Prakaraha we can say. Prakaraha is a masculine gender word. Prakaranam is a neutral gender word. Prakriya is a feminine gender word. And we can use this Prakaranam, Prakriya. Okay, so what is Prakriya here? So what is the word Drik means? Drik means seer. Seer, we can take it as knower. And we have Drishyam. Drishyam actually is a potential passive participle, Drishya, which can be seen. But here we can say Drishya means seen. Drik means seer, Drishya means seen. Drik stands for knower, Drishya means known. How can we use, how does Shastram use this methodology here? To help you understand the Lakshya Artham of the implied meaning of the word Tvam. Before going to the analysis, let me tell you one thing. See, we always use example of the ocean and the wave. Okay? See, wave is small in size, ocean is big in size. But wave is equated to ocean. Wave is ocean. When we say this, when you say wave is ocean, there is equation made. Wave is equated to ocean. How can wave be equated to ocean? Because wave is small in size. Ocean is big in size. It occupies bigger space. It occupies very small space. Okay, in fact, ocean has all the waves. This wave is a small wave by itself. Understand? So how can wave be equated to ocean? From the standpoint of the nama and rupa, name and form, there is difference. From the standpoint of the word meaning wave and ocean, there is difference. What is the lakshyartham of the wave? For the wave to be equated to the ocean, we have to see what is the lakshyartha of the word wave. We say the lakshyartham of the wave is water. Lakshyartham of the ocean also is water. Understand? So from the standpoint of the water, the lakshyartha, wave is non-different from, non-separate from the ocean. The standpoint of the nama-rupas, vachyarthas, wave is different from the ocean. Understand? This is what, there is relative difference between wave and ocean from the standpoint of the name and form, from the standpoint of the literal meaning of the words wave and ocean, from the standpoint of the lakshyartha, the implied meaning of the word wave and ocean, the water, there is no difference, but there is non-difference. Understand? This is how wave is equated to ocean. Similarly, Tvam is equated to the Ishvara, the whole Jagat. You, the individual, are in fact that Bhagavan. You are Bhagavan, you are non-separate from Bhagavan. How? See the Lakshyartham. Oh, what is Lakshyartham? It is easy to know the lakshyartham of the wave, meaning of lakshyartham of the word wave. But what is the lakshyartham of the Tvam? There is no other way. You have to use sampradaya. You have to have this method. And how will I arrive at what is lakshyartha of Tvam? The vachyartha I already know very well. I don't need any methodology to know what is vachyartha of the word Tvam. Okay? I need only lakshyartha. Therefore, we have this Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Understand? What is Drik Drishya? Drik means seer, which also implies knower. Drishya means seen, which means known. Understand? And we have to distinguish now. So, we are going to see always the seer is different from the seen. The knower is different from the known. No object of perception, object of knowledge is known and seen. No object is mistaken for the subject, the knower. The knower is the subject, the known is the object of knowledge. Understand? We never mistake any object of knowledge for the knower. We are very clear. We are blessed with that much buddhi, intelligence. We never mistake the object for subject. We never mistake the known for the knower. Understand? If we mistake all the known for the knower, and we have been treated differently. That's a different thing. Okay. And here, Shastra says, anything implied by any third person or second person, pronoun, is to be understood as the object of knowledge. Just understand, what is an object of knowledge? Anything which can be indicated by a pronoun, okay? Third person or second person pronoun is understood as an object, drishyam. Tatpadavachyena, okay? Tatpadavachyam, anything which is to be indicated by a third person or second person pronoun is what? Is an object of knowledge. You don't mistake an object of knowledge for subject in over. Therefore, when something is far away, you use the word tat, that. When something is nearer, you use the word this. There's difference again, we have different pronouns, that and this. To indicate something which is far from you, use the word that. That is a light. That is a wall. That is a door. That is a window. That is a car. I use all these words. Why? Because they are all far away. When something comes near, I say this. This is a chair. I can use the word this. Whether it is idam pada or tat pada, a third person singular or plural, anything indicated by a third person pronoun or second person pronoun is an object of knowledge. Except, the first person singular pronoun. Therefore, when I say that I don't mistake that light for me, the knower, I am the knower, that is the light, it's an object of knowledge, that is known to me, my object of knowledge. Therefore, I say, that is light known to me. Similarly, when I come closer, I can say, this is a chair, and this is specs. When I say, so this is an object of knowledge. I am the knower and this is known. Similarly, if we say, we come closer again, what about this body? I said, this body, the shariram, pancha bhautikam shariram, the five elemental, the model. This is a small model of five elements, in fact. Combination of five elements, this shariram, even this body, you separate into different parts. I am padaha, you can say, I am padaha, ime charanav, you can say this, these two feet, these two shanks, these two knees, these two thighs, and this back, this front, these hands, these fingers, these nails, you can, this head, this is all the whole body, components put together, or parts put together, you can indicate them using the third person pronoun. Therefore, anything indicated by a third person pronoun, singular or plural, is what? Is object of knowledge. And then the knower, if you say you are the knower, the subject, you are different from the known objects. So this physical body is known to you. You are the knower. This physical body is known to you. This is an object of knowledge, like chair or mic or light. Therefore, you are different from the body. This is the first lesson. This is the first kindergarten lesson of Vedanta. You are different from the body. I don't say you are not the body. Please be very careful. You are not the body. I don't say that. Okay? You are different from the body. you are the knower and body is known to you like any other object is known to you. It is an object of knowledge. It is indicated by the pronoun, third person pronoun. Understand? Therefore, you, the knower, are different from the non-physical body. So, you are not merely the body. Okay? Then we go further again. Okay, what about the subtle aspects, factors, which indwell this body? What are the subtle factors next we can say? No, we see all these five sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin. What about those things? They're all physical parts, the physical parts which go with the physical body, the gross parts. Okay, this is a gross body. This gross body is object of knowledge. Then we say they're very subtle. Why they're subtle? Because they're not available for perception. You can't see them externally. You don't see your seeing power outside. Like I see my specs. Okay? I can see my specs. Okay, even I can see my eyes even. Use with the reflection of my eyes in the mirror, but I cannot see my seeing power externally, outside. But I can understand my seeing power being manifest. My seeing power is not available for sense perception, but it's available for thought perception. I understand. You know whether you can see or you cannot see. Understand? Therefore, your seeing power is known to you or not? Known to you. Your seeing power is known to you. Your hearing power is known to you. You cannot hear your hearing power. You cannot see your hearing power outside, but the hearing power is there. The hearing power is not available for sense perception, available for thought perception. You understand the hearing power being manifest. You know whether you can hear or not. You know whether you can smell or not. The power of smelling, okay? You know. The taste or not. You know, you feel the warmth or not. You know, you cannot see that. Therefore, the sense of touch, the power of touch, okay? All these five sense powers, indriya shaktayaha, indriyani means they're very subtle. Understand? Why they're subtle? You understand the sense powers being manifest, you can't see them externally. You can't perceive through your senses. But you can understand them, sense powers. Understand? Therefore, the sense power, five sense powers are there. They are also known to you. Understand? Whether you go to ENT specialist, the doctor has to ask you how you feel, whether you hear or not. He cannot tell you. He is dependent on your knowledge. Similarly, understand? Therefore, these five sense powers are objects of knowledge. Therefore, you are the knower. The sense powers are objects of knowledge. You, the knower, are different from the known sense powers. Similarly, we have five powers of organs of action. The hands, the legs, the organ of speech, the excretory organ. Okay, all these organs of knowledge, the organs of action, in fact, activities. You can't see them. You can only see the physical part, but the power, the capacity to hold and think and run and all those things, the powers being manifest, you can understand. They're known to you. So the five powers of organs of knowledge are known to you, not external. But you can understand the power being there. You know whether you can lift a hand or not. Yes, if you simply suppose, if you keep your hand like this, I cannot say seeing your hand whether you can lift or not, but you know whether it can function or not. Therefore, the powers of organs of action are also known to you. Anything known to you is an object of knowledge. You are the knower. Okay, therefore, you, the knower, are different from the known powers of organs of action. Sense powers. 10 we have negated as non-self. Okay, anything which is looked upon, an object of knowledge is in fact understood as a non-self. Anatma. And it's a non-self. I don't say it is not the Atma. Okay, just understand it's Anatma, non-self. the physical body, you the knower are different from the physical gross body. Therefore, this physical body is anatma. These sense powers and the powers of organs of action, they are also known to you, objects of knowledge. You, the subject, you are the knower, you are different from them. Therefore, they are also what know? In fact, anatma. You know, what are the five physiological functions? They also, you know, subtle. Nobody can really see the, even if the doctor did not anatomy, we do the anatomy, the physical body, you can see the functions happening. You really cannot see the mechanism involved there. That means what? The physiological function, we can only understand the functions happening. We cannot see the functions. You know, if you open and see, you can see the heart, beating, etc. You can see the flow of the circulation, but still you cannot exactly see the function, how it is happening. Physiological functions are happening. What are the five physiological functions? Pancha pranaha, one prana does five different, governs five different functions. Therefore, they are given five different names. Five physiological names or functions are given five different names as five pranas. Pancha pranaha. Very, very important. Prana Shakti, my God, the five people are very important, five pranas. You know, in the cave, you know, all the five. Every time you eat before the meal, prana yaswaha, apana yaswaha, vyana yaswaha, samana yaswaha, udana yaswaha, brahmana yaswaha. We have to say because these five physiological functions, in fact, our energy, all that is happening in the world, it is possible because of the functions of these five pranas. Five physiological functions were very, very important. Understand? So these functions, we do not see them externally. We can't even, but still they're happening. Understand the functions happening, being manifest there in the system. Understand? Therefore, this pranaha, the pranaha governs the respiration. Apanaha governs the function of excretion, and then the vyanaha governs the function of circulation, and then in fact the samanaha governs the function of digestion, and the udanaha governs the function of retention, and all five systems are governed by five different pranas, okay? Pranas, five vital acts, we say. Pancha pranaha, they're also known to you. Understand? If you say, I don't know what is prana, then you don't eat for 2 days, you'll know whether pramana is there or not. And you'll say, oh, I'm hungry. Then we say, that is what the call of the samana. Okay? Yeah. Or if I can come and hold the nose for 2 minutes, and you'll say, oh, leave me. Then you can understand what is prana. Anyway, these functions are there. You don't see the function externally, but you understand these functions. Therefore, they're all subtle. So all these 15 together, with the mind one, we say 16 factors together constitute, they say sukshma shariram, subtle body, they're all known to you. Understand? They're all objects of knowledge. In the internal organs, like externally you can say this hand, this leg, this finger, this nail, this hair, this head, like that you can also say this heart, these lungs, these kidneys, no insight, that's all the same thing. And the functions, you don't see the functions as you see the kidney, heart and lungs. Especially you understand the functions happening there. Those functions come under a subtle aspect. Understand? Therefore, they're all known. Which is not known now? Known, being known, it's an object of knowledge. Being an object of knowledge, it is different. You are the knower. Known to whom? You are the knower. You are the knower. You are the subject. You are different from the known pranas. Known sense powers, known powers of organs of action. Now what about the mind? You have negated the body as the non-self. You have, it's called negation, okay? Na shariram, okay, shariram is object of jnayate drishyam, it is jnayam, it is drishyam. Understand? Therefore you negate it as what? Not the knower. The known is, okay, knower is not the known. Negate the known as the non-knower, okay, not knower, then it's negated, this first negation, second negation, negated as anatma, non-self. Then you come to what? The mind. What is this mind? I tell you, we'll be studying about the mind. Whole Bhagavad Gita will be studying about the mind. Okay? This is understanding mind. The function of minding is a beautiful thing. The problem lies there. Okay? Anyway, that is a different thing. But still, now I want to understand mind also is an object of knowledge. That's what I'm interested in now. Mind also is an object of knowledge. Many a time we mistake the mind for the self. Mind also is non-self. Why mind is the non-self? Because mind is an object of knowledge. Why mind is an object of knowledge? Because it is known. What is mind? Nothing but it is constituent of many, many, constantly, continuously, flowing thoughts together form the mind. What is mind? What are all the thoughts? What big thoughts? How many ever thoughts are there? All the thoughts keep on modifying. So every thought coming on a thought modification. That's why it's called antahkarana vrittihi. Vrittihi is a singular word. Vrittayaha is a plural word. Antahkarane. Okay? Jayamanaha vrittayaha. Manaha ittuchyate. Okay? They together become the mind. What is mind? Therefore, we say, what are all the different thought modifications? If you say, and then for our help, to make the understanding of the mind easy, the Shastram classifies the thoughts into four, as Manaha, Buddhihi, Chittam and Ahankaraha. What is Manaha? So the word mind itself means Manaha. Again, mind is clubbed into four as mind, intellect, memory and ego. What is Manaha here? What is the Manaha? All the emotions come under Manaha, in fact, start with Ajnanam, ignorance. Ignorance of anything is the state of mind. Something called ignorance is a phenomenon, subtle phenomenon. Look at this. What is ignorance? There's something called ignorance. Where is it? Where does the ignorance exist? What is the locus of it? Ignorance is nothing but a state of mind. Fear, desire, anxiety, anger, jealousy, hatred, like, dislike, dullness, all these things, fear, all these different states of mind, they form the mind. Please tell me, all these states of mind are known or not? Your anger is known, your desire is known, your anxiety is known, your stress is known, your fear is known, your ignorance is known. Except self-ignorance, okay? Ignorance is known because you know what you don't know. You know what you don't know. Sometimes we don't know what all we don't know. That's a different thing, okay? But ignorance is known and all these things are known. Therefore, every thought, modification, everything being known to you, you don't see them externally, known to you, you know. Therefore, objects of knowledge. Understand? Therefore, you, the knower, are different from the known mind, known anger, known desire, known, understand, known anxiety, known jealousy, known hatred, known fear. You're different. You, the knower, are different from the known thoughts. Similarly, what does the word intellect mean? Though the intellect, intelligence, mean, but there are many thoughts together constitute, we are together and given the name intellect, buddhi shakti, buddhihi. Suppose knowledge of anything. What do you know? It's a thought modification. Where does the knowledge arise? Knowledge is a thought. Knowledge is a thought. Understanding is a thought modification in the form of a thought. Cognition is in the form of a thought. Subtle difference. Perception is in the form of a thought. Perception, knowledge, recognition, understanding, okay, clarity, cheerfulness, resolve. This I should do today. Understand? Resolve. Decision. Definiteness. All these things. Different thought modifications. They are nothing but thoughts. They are all known or not. Your decision is known to you. Your resolve is known to you. Your understanding is known to you. What you understand is you know. Are just known. Therefore, different thoughts are all known to you. Therefore, being objects of knowledge, you, the knower, the subject, different from the known, known, different states of mind. What about the memory? Where is the memory? The past is sitting in the memory, okay? Anything past, which happened in the past life, things come to the past, sitting in the memory. Where is memory? Nothing but the thought. Where is the thought? Memory. Just the mind, thought. Memory is known to you or not? Your memory is object of knowledge. You know what all you remember. The remembrance. You know what all you remember. You also know what all you forgot sometimes. That's the beauty of it. Now, forgetfulness is known to you. Your memory is known to you. What you remember is known to you. May God understand. So, memory also is what? An object of knowledge. You, the knower, the subject, is different from the known object, the memory. Okay? So, mind or subject of knowledge. Then we say ahankaraha, one special thought, modification. What is ahankaraha? The knowledge that I am. Do you know you are? Do you all know you are?
Yeah.
If you say no, then we have to really work very hard. My God, it's a different problem. Thank God. That is why we are very different from all. Otherwise, we would have had cows have cow shed, and you know, and then you know, hence the every being has its own place, and we wouldn't have had nice place like this. Would have been put together. Somebody else would have managed us. Then we can't manage. Self manage not possible. Then would have to live under this, you know, the grace of somebody else. Then we have to seek the grace of another person. I know I am. That knowledge, the knowledge that I am, is what? Aham asmita asmi iti jnanam. Where is it? I am. Am asmi. That knowledge, where is it? Thought. Is known to you or not? I know I am. I am is the knowledge. I know I am is what? When you say, the knowledge that I am is known to you. And we can very well say, in waking state, we know I am. I know I am. And deep sleep state, okay? I know. Very well, okay? Deep sleep state, what is there? Nothing is there. What is there in deep sleep state? Nothing is there. Is there pain? Is there pleasure? Is there desire? Is there anxiety? Is there nothing? So we like sleep. Nothing is, why nothing is there in deep sleep state? No jagat exists for you. Why nothing is there? Because no perception, there's no perception. No perception takes place in deep sleep state. Why there's no perception? How do you say there's no perception? I know there's no perception in deep sleep state. The whole jagat is not there. Why the jagat is not there? Does jagat exist or not? Jagat exists. For me, it does not exist. The one who's asleep, okay? When I fall asleep, nothing is there for me. For me, nothing is there, okay? Therefore, when I say for me nothing is there, the jagat is as good as non-existent. Why it is not known? It is not perceived. There is no perception. Why there is no perception? Because sense powers are resolved. The sense powers remain resolved. Why the sense powers remain dissolved? Because the attention of the mind does not stay behind the sense powers. What happened to attention of the mind? Because attention of the mind remains dissolved. Why? Because the knowledge that I am remains dissolved. How do you say? I didn't know when I was fast asleep that I was. Oh my God. The knowledge that I am, okay, is a thought. The knowledge that I am remains resolved in deep sleep state. There is no knowledge that I am in deep sleep state. In waking state, the knowledge that I am is there in waking state. In deep sleep state, the knowledge that I am is not there. Therefore, the knowledge that I am being there in waking state is known. The knowledge that I am being not there in deep sleep state also is known to you. Therefore, ahankara is also object of knowledge. The knowledge that I am being there is known in waking state. The knowledge that I am being not there in deep sleep state also is known. Therefore, it's also an object of knowledge. Understand now. Therefore, this is what is mind. All the thoughts now, think now. Mind, manaha, buddhihi, chittam, ahankaraha, mind, intellect, memory, ego. What is big ego? Understand? Ego is not wrong thing. Don't feel bad about being egoistic and having ego. It's a blessing. That distinguishes from other beings, makes us sophisticated, otherwise we would have been. Understand? Therefore, it's something beautiful. That is why we say, I tell really, it is looked at as the beauty, the most beautiful, finest, highest form of manifestation is the asmita, the knowledge that I am. That makes us beautiful. With that would have been crawling and there's... Understand now? Therefore, the mind is known to you, an object of knowledge. You are the knower. You knower the subject different from the known mind. Therefore, you are not the mind. Okay, understand now? Therefore, you are not the mind. You are not the senses. You are not the pranas, the physiological functions. You are not the powers of organs of action. You are not the physical body. Okay, then what are you? What are you? What is the substance of the substantive I? Body is not the substance. Mind is not the substance. Pranas are not the substance of the substantive I. Like water is the substance of the substantive wave. Okay? What is it which has substantiality? Water has substantiality because water can exist independent of the wave. But the wave cannot exist independent of the water. So water alone has substantiality. Therefore, water is the substance of the substantive wave. Similarly, what is the substance of the substantive I? Not the objects. What is the substance of the knower? Understand now? Therefore, we say, what is there? What is there in deep sleep state? Knowing, what is there? Because of the presence of which I come to know when I wake up from sleep that I did not exist. Understand? The knowledge that I am wasn't there in deep sleep state. There's a deep sleep state. Deep sleep state is an experience. Deep sleep state is a state of mind. A given state of mind. Three states of experience. And that's given, the deep sleep state is experience, object of experience. It is experienced. There was an experience of the deep sleep state. That is why next day morning you are able to recollect your the experience. Without an experience, how can you talk about it? How did you sleep? Somebody asked you. I slept very well. How can you say that? Because you had experience. You experienced it. You know. What is the experience? Nothing was there. There's no other experience. That is your experience. You're able to narrate, tell, you didn't experience anything. Nothing was there. The Dagat did not exist. You did not know anything. No perception took place. Nothing was there. In fact, I didn't even know I was. The last word, the deepest sleep means, the deep sound sleep means, I didn't even know that I was. That should be the right expression. I did not even know that I was. That means what? You were knowing, understand? You were not, okay? That you were not, the knowledge that I am wasn't there in deep sleep state. It's very important. I didn't even know that I was. That means what? The knowledge that I am wasn't there in deep sleep state. The knowledge that I am being not there in deep sleep state is known. That means what is there? Because of the presence of which the I am being not there is known, I am being there is known, the world being the not there is known, the world being there is known, that is always awake. Understand? That is what is the substance of the substantive I. Is it clear now? That substance is implied, indicated, meant by the word pure consciousness. No English dictionary can ever make you understand the meaning of the word consciousness except Drik Drishti Veka Prakriya. There is something. Awareness, pure awareness, pure consciousness, pure knowledge, okay, we can say pure consciousness, Chaitanyam, which is very much there, knowing the deep sleep state, knowing the dream state, knowing the waking state, knowing the thoughts being there, knowing the thoughts being not there, knowing the experience being there, knowing the experience being not there, that is what is consciousness. That is the substance of the substantive I. That is the Tvam Padasya Lakshyataha. Okay? And that Chaitanyam is in fact the Lakshyartha, the substance of the substantive universe. That consciousness is the substance of any substantive, mobile, immobile, sentient, insentient, anything, small or big, subtle or gross, visible or invisible, that is the actual substance of any substantive. Absolutely, not relatively. Understand? That's the substance. Therefore, this has to be, now you have just understood, it has to be understood very well. Understand? This is the prakriya. Now I understand at least, this drik drishya veka prakriya, without using this, there's no way of understanding the lakshyartham of the tvam shabda. Second person get pronoun, tvam. Is it clear now? Therefore, and from the standpoint of the lakshyartha, there is no difference between you and Ishvara. The standpoint of vachyartha, there is difference. And once you understand absolute yourself being absolutely non-different from Bhagavan, then you understand yourself being limitless. Understanding yourself being limitless, not to boast afterwards, I know I am limitless now, I have understood. Not to boast that. To understand, to come to know of all the subtle facts which remain hidden and covered in subtle thing. No, the mind has to observe and understand the subtle facts, unchangeable facts. Then that really, the real strength is in understanding the subtle facts, thereby accepting the subtle facts, the remaining mature, the sort of mature way of looking at anything that is happening around. That is when you are Panditaha. Understand? Then what is there to just, you have to just act. You have to just do the needful. What is it? So dharma. Okay, you have to role play, has to be efficiently. Once you understand subtle fact, the role play, you know you don't need to. Okay? Again, you understand how can you live, function as part of the universe only by doing a role plays most efficiently. Now, the most efficiently, an expert, now you can play your roles very well. Then you will be active. You won't sit idle and lazy. Okay? You have to get up and fight now. That is the thing. Therefore, Tvam Prajñāvādāṁśca bhāṣate. Don't think you are a Prajñāvān. You are a Panditaha. Prajñāvādāṁśca bhāṣate. Gatāsun, agatāsumśca. They all understand what is being alive, what is being dead, what is death. Okay? Why something called death happens? When does it happen? Okay, do we have any say over things which are happening? Desirable or undesirable, do we have any say over things? Can we stop things from happening? What are things we can stop from happening? What we cannot stop? Or which we have say or which we don't have say? All these things, my God, the subtle things. All of them will become very clear in understanding one thing. Ekasmin sighyamya vijnate, sarvam vijnatam bhavati. Many things become understood. Why things are happening like this? Why this man is behaving like this? Why this woman is behaving like this? Why this person is behaving like this in a given situation? What is this? Who is that person? Till yesterday, this person was not in the picture. Hardly has come into the family as a very much... No, as somebody, my God, no, this has created a lot of problems. I tell you, for everything there is an answer. Why? Because we understand the whole situation. Okay? How the order works, order functions. How Bhagavan is a universal natural law and order. That order, Bhagavan being the order. I don't want, even if you don't want to use the word Bhagavan, I tell you how the universal natural law and order, how it functions, how it is, that becomes understood. I tell you, just Sharanam. Just bow. I saw myself there. Understand? That understanding, then you are a wise person. Where am I sitting? Okay? Everything is Bhagavan. Everything is in order. So understanding subtle facts. In fact, that is more important. For that sake you need to know what the truth is. Tvampada Lakshyartha has to be understood. Thereby Tatpada Lakshyartha becomes understood. We understand the Lakshyartham of Tvampada and Tatpada. Bhagavan, the whole Jagat being manifestation of that one substance becomes understood. The whole thing look at us as Ishvara Bhagavan. The whole thing that is order. Understand? Then you are Panditaha. Panditaha na anushochanti. Really speaking, grief has no legitimacy. There's nothing, really speaking, there's no such thing called grief. There's no such thing called something which causes grief, and there's grief. The ignorance is there. The ignorance is the cause for illusion. No, the adhyasa. Adhyasa is the cause for adhyaropa. Adhyaropa is cause for the smallness. The erroneous notion about oneself. All these things will resolve. The demon of ignorance, along with the battalion of all his armies, will be destroyed for good in the wake of knowledge of the truth. Tumpadu lakshyartha. Understand? Therefore, then panditaha, then where is grief? Na anushochanti. Gata asun uddishya, agata asun uddishya, gata asun, agata asun cha. Panditaha na anushochanti. He Arjuna, tvam panditahiva bhashase. No, parantu, bhavan na panditaha, tvam na panditaha, tvam na panditaha. Okay, you are not a pandita. Prajna vancha bhashase. Understand? Therefore, and in the following verses, in fact, Krishna is going to elaborate on the nature of the consciousness, the nature of the reality, how the consciousness is this consciousness being the substance of the substantive I, consciousness being the lakshyartha, implied meaning of the word you and I, the first part, you, tvam. What is the nature of it? And what is this body all about? The nature of this self, atmanaha swarupa lakshanam. Lakshana means it is that by which something is understood. Understand? Lakshate aninaiti lakshanam. So swarupa lakshanam, the nature of the self is unfolded in the following verses. So 11th onwards till the 29th, I think, maybe 31st we can say, but still in these mostly 20 verses, Krishna is going to talk only about the nature of the self. Why? To understand better. What is it, Alan Mahodaya?
Well, at this rate...
time.
Well, you've only... you've been speaking for 105 minutes, and we haven't even moved on one verse, and now you're talking about the 31st verse.
Don't worry.
Will I still be around?
Next week we'll try to go fast, but not...
No. It's perfect. It's good.
No,
it has to be said all these things. Okay. Is it time, no?
It's 20 past 4.
Yeah.
Okay, 10 more minutes. No, my time is still there. Oh my God, I was thinking.
Don't worry.
Okay, anyway, this is how, the first verse. I can't go to the second verse today anyway. I had to stop here.
So we don't need to do Takka Bodha anymore. Viveka anymore. Viveka Chudavani.
See, I tell you one thing.
It's covered at all.
No. What I'm saying, this is how you have to do Bhagavad Gita class. Even if you have studied elsewhere, this is how it has to be done. It has to be simply, what is this? What do you understand otherwise? It is not at over, okay? I thought the first verse is over. And Tvampada, why I'm stopping here? Because all the following verse will take care of what I want to really say. This first verse will be commented upon by the following verses. Always at the secret. The following verses will comment upon this verse. So I don't need to do anything. I have to just tell the meaning of other verses. Understand? Therefore, people think just self-help knowledge, self-discovery. That's not true. It's understanding of Ishwaraha, Bhagavan, as an order. Repeat it. Understanding Bhagavan as an order, understanding Bhagavan as the whole, wherein you resolve your identity, your isolation, you are being isolated from the whole. That is where lies the real understanding of all subtle facts, which will help you just take things which you cannot change. That is where the strength is. In a sense, secondly, you won't be affected. simply understand, accept means not simply mechanically accepting because of my helplessness, choicelessness. You had it only bread means, what choice is there? Yes, I accept it, okay? I'm very hungry, I have to eat something. So that is not because choicelessly I accept it. I accept it on that understanding. You know, choice is acceptance. In fact, here it's some sort of understanding born of, the maturity born of understanding. That acceptance. Okay, this is when we see the, I see myself in everything, everything in myself. All those things people simply talk. This has to be in understanding, not in thing very, very profound. So let me read the Bhashyam fast and finish it. Not much. Okay, because now very simple. Come on. Ashocha nityadi na shochaha.
Na
ashochyaha
bhishmadronadayaha.
Okay, ashochyaha, the one who deserves grief, ashochyaha, one who does not deserve grief, and who are the, because shochyaha, bahuvachane ashochyaha, in plural it is ashochyaha, who are ashochyaha here? Bhishmadronadayaha, bhishmaha, dronaha, adi. Adeha, and all other people, whoever Arjuna was grieving for, all of them really do not deserve any grief. Bhishma Drona Deha. Not only the people Bhishma Drona Deha, even the situation. Okay, really speaking, you can say Bhishma Drona Deha. Then, why they do not deserve any grief? He says, beautiful, next he says, Sad Vrittatvati. See, Bhishmaha and Dronaha, they do not deserve any grief because they are sadvrittatvat. Sadvrittihi means not the sat, not the vritti. The virtue is called sadvritti. The person of good the virtues. The person of virtues is sadvrittihi. The virtuous people are who? Sadvrittayaha. Because of their status of being virtuous, they do not deserve any grief. What is being virtuous? How can a virtuous, being virtuous, make, okay, if a person is virtuous, how can he say that he doesn't deserve any grief? Virtuous means those, he does not, here we have to understand the meaning of the word virtuous. They ask this Bhagavan, ask greatest Bhagavan. Why? Because they know subtle facts. They're highly mature people. Highly mature means the most mature people. They know subtle facts, they know what is right, they know what is wrong, they know what is real, they know what is not real, they know what can be changed, they know what cannot be changed, they know all these things. In fact, the strongest people. Your pity should be always for the weak person, not for the strongest person. Understand, it is, I mean, emotionally strong people, very strong people, they don't deserve any pity, compassion or grief, okay? It's foolishness to grieve for those people. So he says, Sadvrittatvate. So he says, Paramatma Surupena cha Nityatvate. They're also Paramatma Surupena Nityatvate. Nityatvate means due to the status of being eternal. They're also eternal beings. How? From the standpoint of, see, because of, they know, see, by nature, basic absolutely they're all indestructible reality. Therefore, they tell people, you don't need to worry about it. Relatively also, death is something, just a change. Understand? Relatively, death is something, a change, which is unavoidable, unchangeable fact, which happens for any born person, it can be changed. So, the grieving over the death is not meaningful. Second thing, grieving over, then we have absolutely they are eternal people, there's no single destruction, don't need to worry about it. Then Paramatma Surupat, why absolute, Paramatma Surupatma means absolutely everything is one and the same, nothing is not subject to destruction. Relatively, death is a change which cannot be prevented. Understand from two standpoints. Therefore, they as jnanis also, they are highly virtuous people. They don't deserve any grief. Relatively or absolutely, they don't deserve any grief. Therefore, na shochyaha ashochyaha. Then, tan ashochyane anvashochaha. Tan Ashocha means those you grieved for those who really did not deserve any grief. Anushochitavan Asi, you grieved for those people, thinking what do you think? Why did you grieve for those people who don't deserve any grief? He says here, Te Mriyante Man Nimittam. Oh, Te Mriyante Man Nimittam. Mriyante means die. They die for my sake. Always, no? For my sake you do this. For my sake they die, others die. He says, Man Nimittam Te Mriyante. This thinking is all. Man Nimittam, for my sake, Te Mriyante, they're going to die here. I don't want that to happen. Okay, who are to decide about others' death? Anyway, Mannimittam. Aham Taihi Vina Bhutaha. Taihi Vina Bhutaha without Taihi Vina Bhutaha. Without them, Kim Karishami, what shall I do without them? How can I survive without them? Taihi Vina Bhutaha. Aham Kim Karishami, Raja Sukhajina. So I'll have kingdom after these people die. After all my kin and kith die, I'll have kingdom. I'll be the emperor. I'll be the king. I'll have all pleasures. Everything I'll have. What is the use of enjoying pleasures and kingdom, everything, without my people around? I need to feel proud of enjoying them, having them in my presence, okay? Within their absence, if it all enjoy, it's nothing to, etc. All these things. All this thinking, okay? This is a thinking. This sort of very thinking is a wrong thinking, born of the problem. So he says here, Tvam iti, Tvam prajnavadan, prajnavatam buddhimatam, prajnavadan. Shankaracharya says, prajnavatam buddhimatam vadan cha. Vadan means vachananicha bhashase. You speak the words of highly intelligent, wise people. Who are the most intelligent person? Jnani is the most intelligent. Why he is the most intelligent? Because his intellect is the sharpest. How it is sharpest? It has discovered, scrutinized, understood, arrived at the subtlest reality. Therefore, he understood the subtlest fact. Therefore, he is the most intelligent. Okay, he says here, Buddhiman, Buddhimatam, who are they? Panditaha. You speak like them. Vachani Bhasha say, Tad yetat maudhyam panditya cha viruddham atmani darshayasi. Maudhyam means foolishness. Panditya means being wise. Okay? How can one show the intelligence, the foolishness and intelligence simultaneously? One cannot be a foolish and intelligent together. So one must be either foolish, fool or an intelligent person. You can't be both. He said, no, I'm a fool, I'm also intelligent. He said, it is not possible, no? So, Atmani, Darshay, you are showing both, Arjuna. See, Krishna is saying, Shankaracharya is saying all these things. Maudhyam, Panditya, cha Viruddham, okay, which opposed to each other. Intelligence and foolishness, okay, opposed to each other. You are showing both in yourself. Unmattaha iva iti abhiprayaha. It is, you speak like a mad person, okay? You are mad, he says. Unmattaha means mad, highly intoxicated. So he says, Unmattaha iti abhiprayaha. Yasmat, why? Because Gatasuna, who is Gatasuna? Beautifully Shankaracharya says here, Gata pranan. Again, you need explanation, okay? I told the word asuhu means pranaha. Gataha asuhu yasmat means gataha pranaha yasmat. The one from whom the prana has gone is gata pranaha. Gata asun means gata pranan, the dead. Okay, agata prana, agata asuhu, agataha asu, na gataha asuhu yasmat, na gataha pranaha yasmat, agata pranaha. Understand? Agata pranan cha. So he says here, Jivataha. One more meaning Shankaracharya gives, Jivataha. Who is Jivataha means what here? Jivataha, Isha, you have to remember this, Trich, no? This is Jivan, Takaranta Shabdaha. No, Takarantaha, Pullingha, Jivan Shabdaha. The one who is alive. Jivan, Jivataha, Jivan, Jivanto, Jivantaha, Jivantam, Jivataha, Jivat. Okay, jivato jivan jivataha is objective plural. You have to understand that. So jivataha cha na anushochanti panditaha. Who are the panditaha? Here atmajnaha. Panda literally means knowledge. the one who has the knowledge of anything is a Panditha. Again, say Panditha, but here specifically mentions here Atmajnaha, Atmanam ye jananti te Atmajnaha. Those who know the self are the Atmajnaha. Okay, they are the Panditaha. Actually, I finished explaining everything. I'm just reading a Dibhashan because this is too long. Okay, Panda. Panda. See, what is Panda? I'm not saying. Shankaracharya explains what is Panda. Panda means, in fact, Panda is one of the surname in India. In fact, Maharashtra, some areas, the Brahmin surname is Panda. Like Iyer, Iyengar, we have Sharma, Maharaj, all the surnames. So Panda is also surnames. They're actually speaking in India. We have. Some Brahmin community has surname is Panda. Gajendra Kumar Panda, Ravi Panda, like that. So Panda, so like Bhatia, okay? It's Panda is a surname. But here Panda means knowledge. So Panda means what? What Panda? Knowledge of what? Atma Vishaya Buddhihi. What is Panda here? Atma Vishaya Buddhihi. The knowledge for which the subject matter is the self. Then this Atma Vishaya Buddhihi. For knowledge of the self is, knowledge is Panda. So those who know the self are Panditaha. Atmajnaha. Is it clear? Yesham tehi Panditaha. See, Atma Vishaya Buddhihi is Panda. Atma Vishaya Buddhihi ke Buddhihi yesham te Panditaha. They are the Panditaha. Panditaha. Panditya nirvidya iti sutehe. So he also, Shankaracharya quotes from another Brihadaranyaka Upanishad where the word panditiyam is said to be the self-knowledge. Okay? What is panditiyam? Self-knowledge is the, in fact, panda means self-knowledge, and those who know the self are the atmagyaha, are the panditaha. And because Shankaracharya doesn't say, I am not saying this. See, Shankaracharya, how polite he is, humble. I am not saying, giving this meaning as my own. This is the meaning given in the Upanishad, where in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there is a word mentioned. What is the word? Panditya. What is the panditya means? Scholarship, okay, literally speaking. Panditya means a status of being a panditaha. Understand? So, panditya, the scholarliness, the wisdom, we can say panditya. So here, who is a panditaha? So panda definitely means Atma Vishaya Buddhihi. Understand? Atma Vishaya Buddhihi means knowledge of the self. A truth. So they are the panditaha. Iti Shrutehe. Always you have to quote from Shruti. Shruti means Upanishad. That is quote from Veda. Only there is authentic. The meaning given by any person is accept as authentic, proper, you know, meaning, why? Because we have to quote Shruti. Shruti says this, Veda says this, then accept it. No question. We won't say, how can I say what Veda says? No. In India, we accept. Vaidikaha, just I accept what Veda says. Then, paramarthataha to paramarthataha, from the standpoint of, okay, absolute reality, from the standpoint, the lakshya artha, parama artha also, tan, nityan, they are absolutely, they are eternal. Understand? Nityan, ashochyan, okay, those really do not deserve any grief. From the standpoint, from the absolute sense also, they don't deserve any grief. And for those people, you are grieving for those people. Ataha, Mudaha asi. Therefore you are fool now. Iti abhiprayaha. This is the opinion conveyed by this, by saying that. Understand? See, Bhashan is over. What Bhashan is over? Therefore, next look says, Kutaha te ashochyaha. Why they do not deserve any grief? Kutaha. The word kutaha, I tell you, it's over. I'm finishing it. Kutaha te ashochyaha. Why they do not deserve any grief? why do you say do not deserve any group? They're going to die here. If their address is going to my lot, okay? I'll miss them. I cannot relate to them anymore. We miss them because we need people to relate to. That's what is missing, isn't it? It's a big problem. Missing is the big problem. So here, I can't relate to them in their absence. That's a misery. Understand? Therefore, I grieve for them. But here he says, Bhagavan says, Shankaracharya says, Kutaha Ashochyaha, why they do not deserve any grief? If you know, it is foolish for me to say you don't grieve. If I tell you they don't deserve any grief, then you understand your grief is unnecessary. Your grief has no legitimacy. Understand? Then you'll understand, you'll know. Therefore, why they don't deserve any grief? Instead of saying don't grieve, because you're helpless. If I tell you already you're sad, don't be sad. I add to your guilt. Okay? I add to your problem, it's already there. The Shastra is supposed to help me from guilt. It shouldn't add to my guilt. Then what is the use of learning Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita also comes and tells, hey Arjuna, don't grieve. Bhagavan did not say don't grieve. You grieve for those which really doesn't deserve any grief. That's the very important thing here. Understand? If you don't grieve, you don't deserve this. Okay? You are grieving. Understand the fact you are grieving. You are helpless. You can't help grieving. You will grieve. That's why you are grieving. But understand they don't deserve grief. Why they don't deserve grief? Bhashyam begins. Next verse. Yataha. Kutaha ashochyaha. Yataha. Because te nityaha. They are eternal. How they are eternal? From the Lakshyartha standpoint. Okay, if you understand Lakshyartha standpoint, how can I account for the Vachyartha standpoint? That causes grief for me. Then you'll understand subtle facts. To accept and understand, to accept what can be changed, understand, relatively understand, understand that, to accept that, for that I need to understand what is absolutely there. Understand? Therefore, I need to yataha te nityaha. How? Katam te nityaha? Next question comes. We'll see. Natve vaham jatunasam natvam neime janadipaha nachana naiva bhavishyamaha. There was never a time you were not there, I was not there, these kings were not there, all of us were there, all of us will ever be. Okay, we'll see those things next class. Om yaschandasam rishabho vishwarupaha chandobhyo dhyamrita.
Shanti, shanti, shanti.
Rama, 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 Rama.